Welcome to the Pragmatic Podcast for May 6, 2009. Andy Lester, land the tech job you love.
Our niche of the world is small and very focused on having high levels of accuracy, of quality, of technical competence. The conventional wisdom out there as far as career guidance goes is a relatively low bar to leap over. We need to consider ourselves as professionals. We have a higher standard of behavior, of skills, that we need to recognize.
That's Andy Lester, author of Land the Tech Job You Love. I'm Daniel Steinberg, and this week, editor Susanna Falzer talks to Andy about his book and on finding the right job for you. This is the second book in our Pragmatic Life series. Susanna begins the interview by asking how you not only find a job, but you find a job that you love.
Basically, I ask the tough questions that they should be asking themselves. The first two chapters of the book are about figuring out what it is that you actually want in a job, what makes you tick, what is important to you. A lot of people I've found will go looking for a job without really asking those questions. They'll get drawn by the lure of a big wad of cash and say, "Ooh, yes, I think I'm interested in that job." Or they may say, "Well, I have to have a job where I'm working with technology X." And they don't look at the rest of the factors that enter into job satisfaction. I, of course, cannot tell you what it is that's important to you. It truly is an exercise left for the reader.
At the same time, you do have some really useful lists of motivation factors, and they really aren't about money or a particular technology.
A lot of people, when they think about what's important to a job, they think, well, you know, how much am I going to make? What kind of programming language am I going to be working in, or what kind of operating system am I going to be working with? Maybe even the other biggie for techies, do I have to wear a tie? There are plenty more things that go into it. What is your team like? What sort of industry are you working in? How close is it to home? One of the things that you'll find, and that I illustrated in the book, is that what is important to you changes over time. A job hunter at age 25 may well have very differing requirements when he's 30, 35, depending on how family, on job experience, on career goals have changed over time.
You challenge a lot of things people usually think about when they're job searching. For example, how to find a job. You know, conventional wisdom, or what I would think about when looking for a job, is, oh, let me go look on X Job Board and Craigslist, and that's where the jobs are. And you really challenge that by backing it up with some very surprising statistics about how few jobs are actually found on those job boards.
Part of it is that people are not really even asking themselves, how do I find a job? They're just going and doing it. They'll say, well, you know, I need to look for a job. First thing I'm going to go do is the most obvious. I'm going to go look at Dice or Monster or Career Builder. And they don't look any farther. They don't ask themselves, is this the best place to look? You know, the surprising number you referred to is 11.2%. 11.2% of jobs are filled through job boards. And that's according to research by a company called Career Crossroads. That's a really small number. That's 1/9. Most jobs are actually filled through who you know, who your connections are, or internally. What you're talking about is conventional wisdom. It's not even conventional wisdom so much as just doing the easiest thing. The easiest thing to do is to sit there at your computer and go type and search for keywords, because that's what we're good at. That's the way we think. And that's not at all the most effective way to do it. People are concerned about the right way to do a resume. They'll say, well, you know, does this resume look right? Well, there is no right or wrong. Every resume has to be tailored to who you send it to. And that is a very challenging thought for some people when I say it. Or I say, never, ever put an objective at the top of your resume.
Saying no to objectives was surprising to me, because that seems to be what people feel they need to put on a resume. And in fact, I've given people advice based on your book who are job hunting, who have, you know, sent me their resumes to look over. And invariably they'll have that objective up there. And since I've learned better from editing your book, I can tell them, no, take it off.
Well, and the thing is, why do they put an objective on there? And the answer is just because that's what you do. They don't question the value of what that objective is saying. They don't question what it is from the point of view of the reader of the resume. How is the reader going to perceive that? There's no real follow through, and it's amazing to me because techies usually are very good at thinking beyond what happens. If I do this, what will the outcome be? We have that sort of analytical thinking. But when it's time for job hunting or applying for a job or interviewing, we turn that off and we don't think about what the effects of our actions, our words, our paper documents may be as we present them. If you step back from the way things are quote-unquote supposed to be, and you say, well, you know, what is an objective for? Well, the objective is basically saying, hi, here's my name, here's how to contact me, and here's what I would like from you. And that's exactly the backwards way to approach job hunting, because nobody cares what your objective is, what you want. The hiring manager is interested in getting his problem solved, and your objective does not enter into that.
That also goes along with a lot of things you say in your book about your interview and your cover letter and your resume being your first work products for your new job.
Absolutely, absolutely, because what you're doing is you are giving the person you are in contact with at the company their first look into how you work, what it is that you do, how you handle problems. There's a story in the book about a guy who, instead of bringing in some printed material that I asked him to bring in for the interview, put it on a floppy disk and said, well, my printer ran out of ink. And what he told me, without using any words, was that when a problem comes up, instead of doing what you asked, I'm going to put the problem back on you. And so I asked him to bring me a printed document, and instead he gave me a floppy and effectively saying, this is now your issue to deal with. If I had hired him, when he has a problem, he's going to come to me and say, how do I solve this problem? And that's absolutely not what I, as a hiring manager, want. That's not what any hiring manager wants. A hiring manager wants you to be able to solve problems, to do the work that needs to get done. And if you cannot, in the face of your very first roadblock, solve a problem, then you are effectively worthless to that manager.
It is sometimes easy to take the easy way out. The harder part is making yourself hireable. And your book does go through with the perspective of, okay, you're looking for a job now, what do you do? But you end with a chapter on staying hireable, which I think is important for anybody looking for a job now or even thinking about looking for a job, is how do you make yourself hireable in the first place?
Right. And it's not even hireable, it's promotable. And especially in our industry, where if you are not learning something right now, you are falling behind. You know, if you are sitting there and you've been doing Java for the past 5 years and you haven't done anything new in 5 years, you haven't learned another language or another operating system, you are being bypassed by every other potential future job hunter or anybody else who might be up for a promotion for you. So the need to constantly improve your skills is just a part of geek life. No matter whether it's programming or system administration or project management or graphic design, all of those each have their own skills that need to be honed constantly. That's number one. In fact, I believe that if you don't have something new that you can add to your resume at least twice a year, you are falling behind the competition. Even if there is not competition right now, there will be competition in the future, and you're falling behind from them. And so I recommend using your resume as a tracking tool. Look at your resume every few months and say, how have I updated this recently? You keep your resume in Subversion or some other version control system, you can sit here and see your revision logs and which is certainly a very geek way to look at it, but that's good because we have those tools at our disposal and we should be using them. But that sort of forward-thinking view is crucial to not getting stuck. Because the last thing you want to do is be stuck, you know, all I know is COBOL. And, of course, that's not going to happen now, but, you know, all I know is Java. And the world is passing you by, and you're not going to get a new job anywhere else, and you're stuck.
I think that's a great idea, using your resume as a career management tool, not just a job-finding tool. How is looking for a tech job different from looking for other types of jobs?
Well, the first thing that we have to recognize is that our standards are higher. The standards for hiring a programmer or a system administrator are higher than for hiring, say, an accountant or somebody who is working in a less technically oriented trade. And that's one of the reasons I wrote this book, is because books that I saw on the shelf were very general, dealt with hiring for everyone, and talked about resume ideas across the board. Our niche of the world is small and very focused on having high levels of accuracy, of quality, of technical competence, more so than any other industry, I believe. And so we need to recognize that the conventional wisdom out there as far as career guidance goes is a relatively low bar to leap over. We need to consider ourselves as professionals. We have a higher standard of behavior, of skills that we need to recognize. Finally, I try to address to some extent in the book the social issues. Geeks are typically less socially adept than others in the job market, and handling those sorts of social issues is part of being an effective worker in the workforce. It's no longer, and hasn't been for years, it is no longer good enough to simply be able to write code and get things done. There's nothing more of a time waster for a manager than to deal with interpersonal issues, to have to deal with your programmer who went and pissed off somebody in accounting because he's being Nick Burns, your company's computer guy. You still have to interact with other people on your team without being a jerk. But you have to interact with other people in the company. Unless you're sitting here in a very focused Silicon Valley startup, chances are you're working in some sort of service bureau for another company. In the IT department or even product development, you're still having to deal with other people. And the inability to deal with other people in the company, much less in your department, is crushing to the career opportunities and flexibility of geeks in the workplace.
You also walk people really thoroughly through the interview process and how to answer interview questions, which, you know, talking also about surprising ways of looking at things, you have some interesting takes on those tough or difficult interview questions that you always get asked in interviews.
The answering tough interview questions was probably the first one that I knew had to be written. I think you'll recall that when we first started this book, that was one that I knew was going to be probably one of the cornerstones of the book that people were going to read, partially because I'd seen enough interviewing books in the bookstores where you're given stock answers for things to say, either from a technical point of view, giving you a cheat sheet for, you know, how DNS works, or from a social point of view of how to answer the question of where do you want to be in 5 years. And my problem with that is that most of those answers are BS. Answering with a stock answer out of a book for where do you want to be in 5 years is BS, and everyone knows it. The hiring manager knows it. You know it. And it's very disrespectful. And my approach is to say, look, you need to answer those sorts of questions for yourself. And where do you want to be in 5 years is a perfect example. Because on its face, it's kind of a silly question. Well, what do you mean? How can I know where I want to be in 5 years? Because we're in the tech industry. How can I possibly guess? But yet, what that question is really asking is, tell me that you at least have a clue that you're trying to improve yourself, that you are doing more than just collecting a paycheck, that you're able to think these three things through. There is no right and wrong answer. whether on a job-by-job basis or across the board. I recently spoke at Infotech in Omaha, and somebody came up to me afterwards and was asking about that very question. How do I answer where you want to be in 5 years? And I said, well, tell me, where do you want to be in 5 years? Well, I want to lead a technical team of programmers after I get better at whatever his specific field of programming was. I said, well, okay, you just answered the question. There isn't a trick answer. There isn't a sneaky answer. And he said, well, yeah, but what if they want somebody who's going into management? You know, I don't want to be in management. I said, well, that's fine. Then tell them that. I said, you know, are you married? He said, yeah, we just recently got married. I said, great. Before you got married, did you discuss whether you wanted to have children or not? I don't care whether you do or not, but did you discuss it? Yeah, we did. I said, absolutely you did, because that's one of those things that could be a big problem down the road if you are not eye to eye on that. Similarly, at a job interview, that's what you're trying to figure out is, are we a good match? If your manager wants somebody on a management track and that's not interesting to you, then you do no one any favors by pretending that you do. It's all about a relationship. It's all about an honest, open relationship.
Basically, your book is really about honesty, being honest with yourself about the kind of job you're looking for, being honest throughout the job search process, and being straightforward and direct.
And actually, now that I think about it, part of the conventional wisdom of job hunting is that there are times that you say things that are not honest. That there are ways that you can grease the answers to get the answer that the interviewer wants. But yet, that is against your own best interests. Because what you're going to do is you're going to wind up in a job where they want something from you that you are not willing to give, or vice versa. And it's better to go for the jobs that actually are what both of you are looking for.
If you're teaching people, you know, how to be honest and how to search for a job the right way and so on, but this does beg the question, how about now with the economy and the shape it's in, jobs are short supply, how does your advice resonate when times are tough and finding any job, much less a job you love, is really hard?
The answer, I guess, is that the way you look for a job doesn't change. It's simply a matter of what your priorities are. When times are good, or indeed if you currently have a job but are dissatisfied, then your priorities in what is important to you in a job, in a new job, or any job, are going to change. Because if you haven't had a paycheck in 6 months, then yes, you're going to take any, you may well want to take anything that comes along. That's no different. Your priorities change from time to time. It's important to admit to yourself, look, you know what? You know, I may hate working in Windows on Java, but I have to put food on the table. And so I'm adjusting my priorities. And then you accept that. You accept, you know what? I'm taking this job and I'm not really happy about it, but I'm happy I have one. And so, again, there's no black and white. There's no right answer or wrong answer to what kind of job is important. Things change. That self-examination, that honest self-examination, is the first step to getting to the right place you want to be.
I would imagine the principles of job hunting from your book would still be valid. You would search for a job in the same way, but yeah, as you said, the values that you bring to it might be different.
Right. You may well be a lot less choosy, for instance. Oh, okay. Oh, Windows? Yeah, that's fine. You know, you may grit your teeth and say, I hate Windows, but, you know, you're willing to make that sacrifice. It all depends on your situation.
And in that sense, it may not be the job you love, but it's the job that you need at that moment.
And that may well be. If you see that as a step back or a stepping stone to another job you love, then, you know, so be it. Seeing it as a stepping stone is probably the best way to do it. You say, hey, you know what, at least I'm able to, you know, stay alive, have a roof over my head, and still learn new things. Any job you're working at, you're learning something. You can turn anything into a learning experience. If nothing else, that job that is doing something you really find distasteful is still experience on your resume, is still more interactions with others, practicing interacting with others, learning new things, new skills. You know, every project you work on has benefit, adds to your portfolio of experiences. When I first started this project, well before it was a book, when I was working with my friend Bill Odom, and we talked about conventional wisdom and questioning everything that you read, everything you hear other people tell you, and applying it to your situation. There is no right and wrong. Every situation is different. And I would simply ask that everyone who reads the book, who reads any book, who reads any blog online, questions what it is that the person is saying. I'm certain that anyone reading my book is going to find at least one thing they disagree with and say, you know, he's full of crap on that. Or maybe that doesn't apply to me. And that's okay. The key is to question and make sure that it applies to you and your situation as you understand it at that point in time. If doing that helps people move forward to another job that they're happy with, another job where they feel that they're better used, that their skills are better used, or that they're able to do work that they find more fulfilling, then they are happier. The company in question is happier. Everyone is happier. Then I feel like the book will have done its job.
That's Andy Lester, author of Land the Tech Job You Love on the Pragmatic Podcast. As always, you can find more information about our books, screencasts, and training at pragprog.com. Our podcasts are at pragprog.com/podcasts, and you can join the discussion at forums.pragprog.com. Also, I've started blogging about our new Pragmatic Life series at praglife.com. The music for this podcast was composed and performed by Andy Hunt. For the Pragmatic Programmers, I'm Daniel Steinberg.